So. I usually say the same thing over and over, as you know. And talking about this idea that we have so much potential. We are connected to Buddha nature, and we get amnesia. And we start feeling that we have to control things. We feel we need a certain amount of approval, and we have all these strategies that we use to try to manage our lives. And that's our personality, we call it, in the leadership embodiment work. It's similar to ego. The ego is such a complex term that by saying that our personality is the part of us that references on trying to create security in our lives. And the strategies that it uses, one way to think of it is control, approval, and safety. And sometimes we're doing all at the same time, and sometimes I major in control myself. I'm more of a head type, and I just really like to have things be the way I want them to be because that's right. In fact, I sometimes tell people before I started my mindfulness practice, well over 40 years ago now, I never thought I was judgmental. I just thought I was right. And then when I started studying my mind, I was quite shocked and horrified, actually, to see the degree of judgmentalness that is pervasive in my life. And so mindfulness has definitely helped me by noticing that level of judgmentalness and befriending it, because I'm an avid gardener, and when you garden, the first thing you have to do is put compost on the soil, and compost is shit. And so we have our shitty little selves, which is my neediness and my mean-spiritedness and my judgmentalness. But it's all part of the whole. And as I befriend it and come to terms with it, it becomes the manure out of which wisdom and compassion can grow. And then what's good is when I'm out in the world and I notice I'm judging, I can start to choose. I might realize I don't want to be judgmental, I prefer to be compassionate, and because I've done practice, I'm able to, not always, but sometimes shift that. And another habit that I have is one where I plan a lot. I'm not in the now, I get in the future. You know, we need to do some planning, but seriously, over and over and over again, it's like, all it does is keep me from being here and now. And because I can notice that by paying attention in mindfulness to the types of thoughts I'm thinking, I can also catch it out there sometimes and decide I want to be here instead of planning again. So it's actually given me quite a bit of more freedom, mindfulness practice, to choose more how I think, instead of just letting myself be pulled into these behaviors and mind patterns that I have. I found this quote that I thought was a good one. It's from Dongsar Kenzi, who's a Tibetan Rinpoche that I'm fond of. The purpose of practice is to get unstuck mentally, physically, spiritually, from the things that keep us ignorant, rude, warlike, selfish, and non-compassionate. If you think you are peaceful, you will see in deep contemplation you start wars with yourself, even if you don't with others, or that you fight against something, even if it's the materiality of your own body. If you think you're intelligent, you learn in meditation that you know so little. And there's an epic amount of knowledge and wisdom that you still need to absorb. If you think you're beautiful and define this only as a physical state, a spiritual path will show you the places you are ugly so that your soul can grow in that manure. So I think that mindfulness is not for sissies. In my view, it's tough. It's tough to have the discipline to look at ourselves and to develop the compassion to accept ourselves. And then we can start to work with that with others. Some of you who've heard me before know that one way that I work with that is by using my posse. A couple of you said you found that really valuable already, and I have some inspiration cards on the table. So the idea is, who or what represents for me wisdom, compassion, confidence? And instead of trying to find it inside myself, which it's there, but there's a lot of other things that are there too. I sometimes refer to this as Pandora's box. It's quicker and more immediate to think of it as outside of myself, and I can invite it to come through me. It's really me, but if I think of it as the wisdom is really coming from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and I can invite that wisdom to come through me, it feels quite immediate. Or if I think of compassion as being something that I relate with Mother Teresa's energy, and I think about her, I immediately feel a shift. And for confidence, I often use the founder of Aikido, because many of you may know my background is also over 40 years in a martial art called Aikido. And Morihei Ueshiba, Oh Sensei, was the founder. And he said Budo is love. So he was definitely on a spiritual path. He said the goal of Aikido is to be able to protect the attacker, because the person who attacks you is in trouble, which I think is an amazing thing. But he was very empowered, and so when I need confidence, I'll often think of him. And of course, it's not really these individual people, it's their archetype, the sort of energy that they represent. And it's not that they're separate than me, but it's a way to get to that part of myself. And I can get to it immediately if I think of, I'm going to invite the Dalai Lama to come through me now, or Mother Teresa. I have a lot of Irish in me, and I can be very reactive very quickly. And driving, I can be very judgmental very quickly. And still, after all these years of practice, if somebody cuts me off, the first thing that goes through my mind is, what an idiot. And then right behind that, though, if I think Mother Teresa, I think, ooh, be careful. So it's not that I've completely transformed myself into someone who doesn't react. But the good news is I don't react for as long. And I can catch myself, so I don't spend as much time in the reaction. And the reason that's important is because of wanting to find my potential. If my system goes into reaction, I tighten up. And when we tighten up in our bodies, we release cortisol. And cortisol is a stress hormone that shuts down the part of the brain that governs big picture thinking, creativity, innovation, risk taking. It narrows our perception. It's part of coming from the limbic system, which is the body. The limbic system is 2 million years older than the neocortex. This is a much younger part of our brain. And it's a very simplistic part of our system. It thinks lion, run, or graze. That's kind of what we've got, which is why when somebody cuts me off, my body goes to, it's a lion, and I overreact, because the limbic system doesn't have a lot of subtlety. The neocortex does. The problem is the body always wins. If that wasn't true, you could read something, understand it, and thereafter you could do it. But I'm sure your bookshelves, like mine, abound with what I call shelf help books. I've even written 3 of them. I love them. They make sense to me. I love reading them. But when I'm reading them, I'm in a very safe environment. I'm in my bed. I'm in my favorite chair. And then I go out in the world. Stuff happens. And I'm not always able to act from those very places that I liked so much in the book. I revert back to some survival type behavior. So, rather than trying to change the mind with the mind, which can be a hard sell, I don't know, when you're upset, if talking yourself into telling yourself it's really okay, don't worry about it, doesn't always work for me. It's not very quick anyway. But what's helpful is that if I know that stress triggers constriction, and when I tighten, I'm firing these flexor muscles and pulling my energy in, that narrows my brain's perception. So if I can actually train myself to fire extensor muscles so I can sit up and open. And then another thing is to open to the possibility that there is wisdom and compassion, Buddha nature around me. But by actually changing my muscle groups, my brain starts to operate differently because I get testosterone in my system instead of just the cortisol. And too much testosterone by itself is annoying. We're all pretty aware of that. So the other chemical I want is oxytocin. Oxytocin is a stress hormone. It also, of course, is considered the hug chemical. It, when we're with somebody we love or an animal, or it's released. But it is often released during crisis. It's the chemical that makes us want to help others and receive help from others in those situations. So one of the ways we can trigger oxytocin is if we just, even for a few seconds right now, think of something or someone that when you think of them makes you want to smile. And that bit of warmth that you feel is the oxytocin. So what we want is a combination of testosterone, which has a sense of confidence, expansiveness, big picture thinking. We recognize Buddha nature is there, and we want oxytocin. We want a feeling of being connected. So you may have done this before, but it's worth another round. It's been a few months since I've seen you. I'd like all of us to cross our arms and slump a little bit. And think of something that happened in the recent past that was irritating or annoying. Please don't freak yourself out, but just something that was annoying enough. We'll go there for about 8 seconds. Okay, stop. You probably all got there in two. Now, let's sit up a little straighter and uncross. And what I'd like us to do is think of the breath as up and down instead of in and out. So as we inhale, lengthen the back of your neck and breathe up. And as you exhale, breathe down your front, soften your chest, and think of something that makes you smile. Let's do it again. As we inhale, we have a dignified posture. And as we exhale, we soften, thinking of something that makes us smile. Now let's open our eyes and look to the far wall and see if you can imagine that your personal space, which is like a bubble, extends to the far wall, and then imagine that it extends behind you and to the sides, and perhaps you can include the entire room, this sangha, inside your bubble. So you're just sort of pushing your personal space out so you're a little bit bigger. Nice. And then ask yourself, what would it be like if there was a little bit more generosity in my being right now? Just let yourself wonder, just a tiny bit more generosity. Bless you. And now think of that same event again. And notice if you, as you think about it, is it different at all? Is it different for anyone? Could you say it was different, Mary?
It was almost like kind of a compassion for the other person, like, oh, he just forgot. It happens. It's a human. I feel myself being more expansive and not pissed.
Yes. Awesome. what was your?
When I expanded, I felt happier, calmer, and more loved and more loving.
Oh. Anyone else want to just share one more? Threes are always good. Yeah?
The irritating event was just much lighter.
Yeah.
It didn't have that weight on it.
Exactly. So that was why I think I took about 20 seconds, if that, to coach us into a different energetic pattern using the breath and different muscle groups, and it actually changed our perception. It's much quicker than trying to talk ourselves into feeling better. By firing a little bit more extensor muscles, uplifting and opening a little bit more, by activating that sense of oxytocin, that feeling of connection, it actually changes the chemicals that are being released in your system, and your brain starts to operate differently. So it's pretty cool. You can even do it in 5 seconds. We've talked about this before, that sense of sometimes I talk about three words, and you can make up your own words. It's the principle. I use the words uplift, expand, settle. Or you probably heard my story about my Aikido teacher who talked about he was frustrated with us at a seminar because we were too tight and then we were too sloppy. And he said, I want to see you're noble. I want to see you're awesome. I want to see you're shiny. So sometimes I'll use that. I'll invite myself a little more noble, which is the uplift. A little more awesome, which is the expansiveness. A little more shiny, which is the warmth. So you can use any words you would like. If you understand the principle, you're coaching yourself to shift your energetic pattern from closed, a little bit what I call low ceiling, to more open, and that sense of lightness. And I know there's a lot of rhetoric around being grounded, but I really encourage you to also think that lightness is as much of a power as being grounded, if not more. Because the problem with being grounded, you can actually get overgrounded, in my view. Because when you start putting, if everyone says to themselves, okay, get more grounded, and we just do that, okay, everybody get more grounded. Yeah, the energy in the room got heavy. If I say, okay, everybody, see if we can lighten up a little bit, the energy in the room just got lighter. Now, why this is important is because we spend a lot of our lives having conversations. And in those conversations, the quality of energy has a lot to do with how we can move through the conversation. If I'm heavy and I'm having the conversation and saying, you know, it's really important and I want you to understand this, you'll get heavy because of mirror neurons. How we reflect each other. Like if you see me eat a piece of lemon, now your body will go through a little change. That's what mirror neurons are. So if I can have a feeling of lightness and upliftedness, and then we're going to have conversations, the quality of the conversation will be able to be lighter, and therefore we might be able to discuss more difficult things, and the conversation moves along. Whereas if I start to get heavy and we try to discuss difficult things, other people will get heavy, and the communication could be get stuck more easily, if that makes sense. So the problem is that we haven't been in the habit of being light and shiny. We've been in the habit of thinking about things and trying to understand things and trying to fix things and trying to deal with things. And that habit has a little bit of low ceiling, is how I like to describe it a little bit. So we could actually practice and train ourselves to be a little bit more uplifted, a little more light, a little more open. Think of your favorite spiritual teachers. I imagine that when you think of them, you don't think of them as being kind of heavy and serious, and I think of them as being shiny and bright. And I think of them as being big. Very expansive and very inclusive. And when I'm around them, I feel accepted. And that feeling of acceptance is such a powerful message. It doesn't mean we necessarily like what the person does or says. But as in good parenting, we want to give the message that the children are loved even when we don't like their behavior. And I would say, as adults, it's important that we give the message that I accept you even though I don't like your behavior. Because as soon as we stop accepting people, we start separating, and there becomes you and me. And as soon as there's you and me, then there's bad and good, right and wrong. And when we feel separate, then we have to defend ourselves and protect ourselves. And some people do that by being aggressive. It's what we call counterphobic. It's something that I have very strongly in my personality I have to watch out for, which is the get them before they get me habit. And so what I'll do when I'm uncomfortable is I'll escalate, I'll get aggressive if I'm afraid. And I'm not the only one on the planet. A lot of aggression is fear-based. And the fear is that if because I'm separate from you, I have to manage you. If I can start to train myself to practice, even in small little bits, that I'm not separate, that we're actually connected. And the way to train myself to do that is by teaching myself to concentrate on, to think about the space, because it's the space that connects us. And in my belief, in my view, the space is filled with Buddha nature. It's benevolent. I think if it wasn't, many of us wouldn't have made it home from time to time. I'm sure I'm not the only one in the room that suddenly arrived home and thought, whew, how did I get here? Because I was spaced out. And then suddenly my system got me there. Or there have been other times where I felt like there was some benevolent energy that helped me get through a situation. So if we connect to the space, and it's a practice, because we're actually, our culture teaches us that who we are people who have to manage things, concepts, and people. So our world is very horizontal, and it's very much about managing other. Whereas Buddha nature is very expansive. It's all around. It's above, it's below. It's around us. And it's filled with qualities and attributes, which one way to think about it is to get your posse and think about the inspiration, aspects of Buddha nature, wisdom, compassion, confidence. But by teaching yourself to concentrate on space for brief periods of time, the space becomes alive. So as I sit here and I look, I actually can see the spaces between you. They're shapes. And I can notice the space above us. And there's space between our fingers. There's space in the back of our necks. And if you put your attention on the space, suddenly the world is a little bit different. Instead of putting all our attention on the person or the concept or the thing, it's being artistic. So when we learn art, we always learn about space. If you put two notes together, they're dissonant. If you put a rest between them, they become melodic. Poetry, sculpture, painting. All of those arts understand that the space is key for creating that artistic experience. So how do we become more artistic in the way we engage in everyday life? Again, if you think about your favorite spiritual teachers, there's a feeling of spaciousness, a feeling of ventilation almost around them. It's that presence that they have. I don't feel claustrophobic when I'm in the presence of spiritual teachers that really inspire me. I feel more, that I can take that breath. There's also space inside of our bodies. Our bodies are made up of a gazillion atoms. And all those atoms are primarily space. Right? They say that the particles in the atom are sort of like the equivalent of the baseball players in a baseball field. But there's that much space in every atom. And of course, the Buddha, I think, was very aware that things have a tendency to exist. That they're not as solid as they seem. Because there's so much space. It's sort of like when they try to find matter, the scientists, they study it and they study it and they find it and it's a particle and then it becomes a wave. So they can't pinpoint matter. So, I mean, I feel like Buddhism talked about that it isn't as solid as you think. And that emptiness isn't a nothing. It means it's empty of that independent feeling of solidity. Everything is interconnected and everything is impermanent. So we can use the space as a support system. That's a little bit what we try to do in working with that exercise in the walking. Remember the feeling of hand on our back. That sense that the space is inherently filled with Buddha nature. And that it's not that reactive. Sometimes I've traveled a lot. I travel a lot. And in traveling, sometimes things get weird. And every now and then, when it gets weird, I feel myself start to react. And then I say to myself, how does the space feel about that? It's this little technique I use, and then I suddenly get a small space, doesn't care. It just adapts. It just adjusts. All right, I ask myself, what does holiness do, the Dalai Lama right now? And I think, oh, and I relax, and I think of his little giggle, and then he'll make a response. And so all of those little focusing devices are ways to help me keep balance in my life. It's not like I don't lose it. I lose it all the time. And I can do this little, one of these little exercises and get myself back briefly and then I lose it again. So to me, it's a little bit like the universe pulses. And so I pulse between my reactive self and my centered self. And I'm actually both. I'm human. I react. I want you to like me. I want things to be in control. And I'm connected to this amazing Buddha nature that can relax and just let things be weird. And smile about it. And then I get triggered before I know it, and I'm back to being annoyed or irritated. And if I apply one of these techniques, where I'm able to ask, how does the space feel about that? Or, what would Mother Teresa do? Or invite any kind of quality. Working with the Tonglen practice, I don't know if you know what that is, but if I realize I'm irritated, I can breathe in irritation and breathe out generosity. And basically, the suggestion normally is that your exhale is twice as long as your inhale, because that calms you down. So if I'm breathing in irritation, one, two, breathing out your generosity, one, two, three, four. So I get a little more generosity. And I haven't tried to get rid of the irritation. I've actually accepted it. And as I accept it, I stop tensing against the irritation. I'm like, yep, irritation and generosity or appreciation. Or you could use any words you want, but you get the idea. Is to be able to notice when you're concerned, irritated, frustrated. I would stay away from the strong words like angry and hateful. You could work with words that have a little more neutrality in them. And if you breathe in that concern and breathe out that appreciation, it's just such a relief to the body. You could try it. Think of something that you're concerned about. Kind of notice that feeling of concern. And then breathe in the concern. And then breathe out something like appreciation. or gratitude. And then do it a couple of times. Notice the concern. Breathe it in, accept it. And breathe out kindness, gratitude. Is that different? Do you get a little? I always get a little relief when I do that. And then the concern comes back again. It's not like it goes away. The irritation comes back because I'm right. And that's not right. But the idea is not to stay there because it's not good for your body, it's not good for your mind, and it's not good for the environment to indulge in reactivity. It's fine to be reactive. It's the indulging part. It's fine to acknowledge it. It's fine to speak about it, have your voice. But when you start to get caught in it, and it's that spiral where we begin to indulge or obsess, that's very unhealthy. And it won't change whatever it is that we're irritated about. It won't. Our indulging doesn't make that any different. All it does is it wears down our immune system. Because we've got the kind of chemicals in our body when we're doing that that says we're in danger. And it's fine to be in danger, the limbic system, briefly. It's not good to flatline the feeling of being in danger. Because our limbic system isn't designed to stay in that space. It's designed to dip into it and then come into a more balanced, relaxed place. So I'll just speak a little bit about all this wind. Boy, it was windy today at my house. And in Tibetan Buddhism, there's a concept called the wind horse. And I love horses, so wind horse works really well for me. I'll read you a little quote about wind horse. Wind horse is a dynamic, fundamental principle of life and cosmos and the expression of basic goodness. The wind in the wind horse also relates to the breath and its essential role in sustaining life. To the extent that to breathe is to be alive and vital. The horse refers to riding the energy of the vital breath and hence of life itself. It could almost be equal to life force, though it infers a great deal more than mere biological energy. It shares similarities with the Chinese notion of qi, Sanskrit yoga designation of prana, and the Navajo theme of nichi, or sacred wind. It is the basic vitality and creative potency of life, of individuals, of the total environment and the universe. So one of the feelings was, how do we raise the wind horse energy? How do we uplift ourselves so that we can really use this dynamic part of ourselves? And for me, the best way to do that is to be sure that I have a feeling of expansion. That I can really, even though it may take effort, that I'm willing to do the hard work to push the energy out a little bit. And you don't have to stay there. To just take a moment to do it. Every time you do it, it's like a repetition, which builds the muscle for expansiveness. And when we're expansive, we start to be inclusive by nature. And the other thing that happens when we begin to practice expansiveness is we start to become a bit bigger. Size matters. Not the size of your biceps, but the size of your spirit. If we can allow our spirits to be bright and be expansive, a couple of things happen. One is people respect people who have a big spirit. They may not agree with them or even like them, but you'll get respect. People will listen to you. And the other thing is that positive energy goes into the environment. So you're doing your part. not to kind of mess up the environment. And one way to do that is just for a moment, just take your arms and just extend them out. So there was an image that somebody gave me that I thought was really cute. She said, when people have stuff going on in their neck, instead of trying to release it, if you imagine there's baby lambs and they're nursing on your fingers. Or you can imagine there's droplets of water on your fingertips. And if you think of the droplets of water, or that the energy starts to flow down your arms and out, and all of a sudden, everything gets a little bigger, a little brighter. And then just put your arms back in your lap. Feel how your energy just went. Now, it's perfectly possible to sit with your arms crossed and have big energy. But when you're building a muscle, you have to do a little bit of work. So I'm going to encourage you to, every now and then throughout the day, for just 5 seconds or 10 seconds, just extend your arms. Imagine there's droplets on your fingertips. And just let the energy run down through you. Let yourself open up. It's work. And you'll find when you go back to this, it may be a relief, but you might notice that you've gotten smaller and you've closed. And that there might be some place that you could find as a resting place in between. That you could make a goal of it just to be a little more open, a little more expansive. But one way to do that, if you want to be in a little bit better shape, you have to do a little bit of workout. Right? And it's a workout. Right? So this is your workout for a few seconds. And then you get to rest. My sense is if you do it throughout the day, maybe even 10 times a day, your sense of how you are in your being becomes a little bigger, a little shinier, a little brighter. Which to me means that you're then accessing more Buddha nature. You're letting it come through you. Instead of thinking yourself as a separate person, you are Buddha nature. We know that we're Buddhists, pretty much. Imagine. Or something like that. Right? At least animists, believing that everything is imbued with life force. So how do we allow ourselves to be connected to that positive life force and not to get stuck in trying to figure things out, sort things out, control things, get it right? Just don't get stuck there. It's fine to do it, and then it's fine to take a time out and just take a breath, open up a little bit. Let the energy run, invite a little bit of inspiration, get a little more noble, awesome, shiny, and then go back. And every time you do it, it's like doing a repetition. We rehabilitate the part of us that knows that we're connected, that there's flow all around us, and that the universe wants to come through us and support us. So I'm going to stop for a moment and see if there's any questions or comments on anything that we've done or I've said so far. Yes.
Just that I really love that language, indulging in reactivity. I think it's incredibly radical given the way most of us live these days.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's like being a little bit disciplined and calling ourselves on our own stuff and saying, it's fine to be reactive. It's normal. But indulging doesn't help anything. And asking myself, am I indulging? Mm-hmm. And I don't know the answer to that, but it's a good question.
I liked your quote about the wind voice. I have a question, though. The wind can change the energy to be heavy. And you know, I experienced when it gets very windy, I experience that tension. And how does that mean, according to, you know, the quotes that you said, the wind is a light or an energetic, you know, embodiment. But how can you get rid of that feeling of tension and heaviness when it gets windy?
Well, I would say, no, I absolutely, there's a lot of people who don't like it at all. It's like anything, it's building up our capacity to tolerate it little by little. I'm a sailor, and sailors love wind. And I can get annoyed by it, but I can also get annoyed by when it's still and hot. I love rain, I can get annoyed by rain. You know, almost anything can be annoying. Because I'm easily annoyed. And the capacity to say, I feel like I'm tightening because it's too windy, and then ask myself, am I willing for 5 seconds to uplift and open and let the wind energize me? And then I can go back to being annoyed and pull my coat around me. But little by little, if you're willing to do that. I remember being at the beach one time, and it was really windy. It was Lemon Tour or something. Really windy, and I was like, damn, because I wanted to be and walk on the beach and have a great day. And, you know, it was super windy, and I was pulling my coat around me and thought, I'm going to go back to the car. And I saw this guy, and he was in a T-shirt, and he was like this, doing circles on the beach. And I was like, okay. I'm not going to be able to do everything he did, but I'm going to spend a few seconds here, and I'm just going to do what he's doing, because I refuse to, seeing that he could embrace it and be empowered by it, that I was going to try it. And it helped. And I did go back to the car, but I didn't feel quite as grumpy in the end.
You said you were a sailor and you love the wind. Well, I used to sail too, and on a boat, wind is very different than it is on the land. And so on a boat, I felt like I was in control. Again, it goes back to that control part.
Yeah.
Because if you're not in control, then you're in trouble. But I still can't, when I'm on land, or, you know, when it starts to blow, I get tense. I just do it really tense.
Well, I would say the purpose of practice is to get unstuck. I mean, that was not mine. That's the quote. So, you know, when we find those areas, then that's the area to work on. If we're good at something, all right, yay. It's when we feel that there's a place where we're stuck, that's where practice comes in. So to take the attitude, okay, I have a thing about wind, and what I'd like to do is see if I can get a little bit more open to it, and practice every now and then just doing this with the wind instead of doing this with it.
So I have a question, but first I want to say thank you. I always love your reminders. You did a meditation with us once, what if your hips were the mountain, and so forth, and I have shared that. And the bit about the posse, I picked up a picture of you doing Aikido, a picture of Nelson Mandela, and oh my God, the black woman who's good friends with Oprah Winfrey.
Maya Angelou.
Thank you. And they're on my kitchen wall, and I look at them all the time. And I've shared the posse idea with friends, too. So thank you for all of that. So my question about being more open and being expansive. I once had a therapist who said to me, take yourself back, Deborah. Take yourself back. Because I think I overwent out, which you mentioned earlier. And I have a hard time expanding out around people I don't feel safe around. If I've trusted you once, twice, three, four, five times, and I got shot in the foot, I don't feel safe anymore. And I feel like I need to keep my energy with myself and find a more composted soil to plant my seeds, so to speak.
Well, I get this a lot. People say that when you're open, you're vulnerable, or it makes you not safe. It hasn't been my experience in Aikido or in the world. I feel when people close off, they become more of a target. Mm-hmm. And I notice this from martial arts and just life in general. I think I've said this before, but if somebody doesn't feel respectful or safe to you, that's when I use my posse. I let them, okay, what would the Dalai Lama do with this person? What would Mother Teresa do with this person? I mean, it's really me, but it's my resourceful self. What would founder of Aikido? And remember, if they're unpleasant and we don't feel safe with them because they're unpleasant, mean-spirited or judgmental, the one with the most juice wins. So, on a scale of 1 to 100, how unpleasant are they? And then if there's 75 watts of unpleasantness, I need 80 watts of noble, awesome, shiny. Now, I might not be able to get it yet, but that's my goal, is can I... Because I feel like being around Thich Nhat Hanh or the Dalai Lama, I see that. I once saw this deranged guy come in to a talk Thich Nhat Hanh was giving, and he was screaming, and he was deranged, and he threw himself at Thich Nhat Hanh. All these people rushed up to try to take him away. He was some homeless guy, and he goes, Thich goes, no, 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 no. And he puts his hand on him like this, and pretty soon the guy was just like curled up because his compassion was stronger than this guy's insanity. It was amazing. And I'm not anywhere near there. Still, it's the direction I want to go in rather than how do I fortify myself more against weirdness. Like, I don't want to go in that direction. I want to go in the direction of how can I bring more noble, awesome shininess to match somebody's unsupportiveness or mean-spiritedness or the fact that they didn't take care of me.
Or maybe they're fearful.
Absolutely any of it. But rather than relying on someone else to take care of me, how do I let trust that Buddha nature can take care of me, that I have that support? But it's a practice, because the habit is to go back to protecting ourselves. That's what our culture has trained us to do. And it just hasn't worked, because we're not a super happy culture. As far as cultures go, I travel around the world, and Americans are not the happiest culture that I've seen. You know, we're very defensive, and we tend to be kind of needy, and we tend to be fearful and easily irritated. So I think we need to work with ourselves to look at what's the alternative. And how do we feel powerful in that by opening instead of vulnerable? And for me, the key is it's not me. It's these aspects of my potential that come through. And it is me in the end, but it takes a while for me to identify with them. Does that make sense? Yeah. Anything else? I think it's just about time for the metta cards. But before we do the metta cards, let's do one more exercise while we're sitting here. Think of, let yourself slump a little bit. It's easy, amazing how easy it is for me to do that part. And think about something that you have to do either tonight or tomorrow that's not your favorite thing. Just some chore or something that's like, ugh, not so great. Okay, now let's get a little more noble. Yeah, a little more awesome, a little more shiny. Think of something that really makes you want to smile a little bit. Push it out just a little bit. Maybe invite some heaven and earth to run through you, a little of that centrifugal and gravitational force. Remember the feeling of hands on your back. And think of that same event that you have to do, that same chore that you have to do either tonight or tomorrow. And notice if it's different. So for me, it's no big deal. It's just, okay, I can do it. It's not the most pleasant thing in the world, but doable. So I just encourage you to, throughout the day, find ways to in sort of see if you can get more of a ritual practice, whether it's certain times where you're in the kitchen, maybe if you work on your computer, when you open up your computer or you boot it up, you could take a moment and do noble, awesome, shiny. If you find some regular places, it should take you 5 seconds or 7 seconds, that you can start to get in the habit of touching into that part of yourself more often, and then it becomes more familiar, and we realize we're that as well. as somebody who's trying to manage our life and can be easily irritated. Mm-hmm. We're also somebody who has a great sense of appreciation. Thank you very much.